I'm Randy Andrews. You know Allie, Josh, Billy. We're here to help with raising money for U-Turn. I'd like to have Josh introduce what that is.
We're out here at 156th and Pacific at Scooters. We've been raising awareness and raising funds for U-Turn. We're a new nonprofit, came out in the fall. Downtown, we work with at-risk youth in the area, 12 to 24, intervening in gang lifestyles and also prevention. We're in the schools, we're working with trauma centers, we're in corrections. Just trying to get the word out about U-Turn and the services and the podcast arcade with Underground Inc. and now Soundtrack Alley has been gracious to be our host for the day and help us get the word out. So thanks for doing that, Randy.
Yep, not a problem. And today we're going to be talking about The Warriors from 1979. Mm. Older movie, but really interesting. It'll be fun to talk about the cast, the background, and the real life comparisons, and of course, the soundtrack.
Oh, yes.
And that's why it's all coming up today on Soundtrack Alley. It's good to have you on the show.
I've never
had you on the show.
This is correct.
Allie, yeah. I don't think we've ever met.
No, nope, so. This is first.
Yeah. I found so many interesting points about the Warriors, and the only way I was able to watch it was through Amazon Video. And fortunately, it was free. I didn't have to rent it. I didn't have to do anything. It was already free. So
that's the best.
I was like, yes, I can actually watch this film. So, did you know that Ronald Reagan, the President of the United States, was actually a fan of this movie?
Why wouldn't he be?
Well, he had even called the film's lead actor, which was Michael Beck, to tell him that he had screened it at Camp David and enjoyed the film, which was kind of cool. So,
interesting.
Yeah. It was some interesting little tidbits on that. I never thought that he would have, you know, a president of all things, oh, watch a 1979 movie, yay! So, it's interesting, according to the filmmakers, on the Ultimate DVD version, there was going to be a big hit that they thought that it was going to be a number one movie, but it had some negative reviews. Because of the word of mouth and a couple of incidents that killed the film's momentum. Because they weren't sure how it was going to react to, say, New York or New York City, because New York City already had gang problems in general, and they weren't sure how it was going to react to the footage in the movie, how anything. And it just interesting, it brought out that gangs were attracted to the film, and they had seen that rival gangs caused violent incidents, but Paramount, they panicked and pulled the movie out of the theaters. And so Lawrence Gordon said the movie kept going while the studio pulled the movie out. And despite this, the movie went on not only to be a cult hit, but became kind of a timeless classic. It made $22.4 million. And for 1979...
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. It was interesting Another thing I found was that the actual film trucks were protected by a real gang called the Mongrels for $500 a day.
Really?
So they paid them $500 to protect
the trucks. Yeah, they're probably like, this is so you can protect us, and it was probably more like, we're just going to pay them some money so they don't, like, try to kill us.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing that really actually I found super humorous about the movie was so many different themed gangs in the film.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, one of the main ones that stands out to you right away is
the Baseball Furies. So, Allie hasn't seen this movie.
Yeah.
So, she's kind of like our... We bounce all this stuff off of. They're dressed up in baseball uniforms.
Outfits.
They got hats. They carry baseball bats. But they paint their face.
Yeah, and they...
They don't talk.
Yeah.
Huh.
They just smile at you and swing their bat.
Yeah.
You know?
They're like...
Still, like, smile creepily at
yeah.
you?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're
yeah.
like, okay,
well,
I'm gonna take you out now. Okay.
The way their makeup was, it's inspired by Kiss.
Okay.
The group
in a
Kiss.
Way,
yeah.
Yeah,
Kiss, yeah.
Because I even had it in my notes that they were created due to Walter Hill's love of baseball and the glam rock band Kiss.
Interesting.
So
did they, there were, like, so they have a baseball theme thing, and they had other, like, interesting themes.
I don't remember the name of the gang, but there's one that they all, I think they're all in bib overalls.
Yes.
But the most important part of it is that they're all wearing roller skates.
Yes. There's, like, a roller skate gang. There's a women's gang. They call them the Lizzies.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
so, yeah.
Yeah.
There's one called the Orphans.
Yeah.
And
yep.
they purposely, like, make themselves look like orphans. They're
look
dirty
like
and kind of grungy clothes.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
By the way, for listeners of the podcast and of the live video, you're going to hear people talking in the background. You're going to be hearing noises because we are doing this live at Scooters of 156th and Pacific. And, I mean, we can't control the people from talking and stuff. So,
and
if you're hearing things, that's why.
And they're making good stuff, so.
Yeah, it's Scooters.
They were generous to give us their space to be able to hang out, promote the U-turn thing, and our podcasts. So, anyway, that's all. Back to the Warriors.
No, it's perfectly good because also this podcast will actually be a special episode that's going up this Monday.
Nice.
So I'm going to get the editing
done. So you're
going to
go home and get this thing worked on. And post
it'll be tomorrow that
right,
I'll be working
right.
on it because I got to work tonight.
Sure.
So, but there's so many other types of areas that this film took place, and the film takes place entirely at night.
Yeah.
Okay.
They
well,
did
until the
all
end.
The film. Yeah, until the end, you see the sun, but the entire movie is filmed from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. Like. When they did the filming, they only did it at night. And the area where they did, they had this big old gang meeting that was of all the gangs that would show up.
Except the Orphans.
Yeah, the Orphans didn't show up because they thought they were too cool for it or something.
Well, it was a thing of, like, when the Warriors later run into the Orphans, they're like, oh, we're just coming from this thing. They're like, what do you mean you're coming from what thing? They're like, oh, all the gangs were there. And they're like, what do you mean? Like, they take offense to it because they're like, what, are they saying that the Orphans aren't good enough for it? Like, we got street cred. They're considered like a D-level gang.
Yeah.
So does this have, like... comedy undertones?
No, it's really serious.
It's a pretty serious.
Yeah,
I mean, just from like the sound of like the different types of gangs, it almost seems like they have like a dark comedy.
You would think it does not.
Yeah, but it's.
Taken, I mean, sure, there might be a few things to laugh at. You know, just because.
But it takes
like, it might naturally be funny. It's
really
not,
serious.
No.
Interesting. Okay.
Like the only comedic character I find in the film is James Remar. And James Remar, he's been in...
Dexter. He's Dexter's dad.
Yeah, he was in Mortal Kombat Annihilation as... what's his name? Raiden.
Raiden.
He was Raiden. He was in one of the Fast and the Furious movies.
You know, he's fairly funny. I mean, just because he's like a cocky, snarky kind of guy.
Like a comic relief almost, but
yeah. No, I mean,
not even.
I don't know. If
not
I
really
consider
comic,
him, like,
comic relief because he's a very serious guy.
He's just funny because
he's just
like
goofy. I mean,
he says things that aren't PC. I mean, the movie's not really that PC anyway, but like he's kind of like the rebel of the group. Like he kind of like challenges the leader, you know.
Okay.
It's kind of that alpha, you know, thing. And I'd say the other one that would be considered funny is the hooker.
Yeah.
That starts going with them, and that's just because she's like making fun of them, like, you know. And
yeah,
it's little things to maybe laugh at, but it's not done in a comedic tone.
Okay.
Yeah. And
long answer.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to explain. In the original script for the movie, Cleon is killed by the Grammissary Riffs. Cockies, I don't know who that is in the film. It's hard to keep the names
there's a lot of games.
Accurate. But there's a lot of killing in the original script, but in the movie, there's only one guy that really gets killed.
I mean,
and it's at the very beginning of the film, and the warriors get framed for that murder.
Right.
And so they're running for their lives through the different parts of New York at night, trying to get back to Coney Island.
Right.
So it's like a hero's journey.
Yeah, in
a
sense. And like I said, you know, you said the film, other than the very end, is all shot at night.
Yeah.
And I would say it's all in the same night.
Yeah,
yeah,
I was gonna
it
ask,
is. One
it
night.
Takes place in one.
Yeah, it's one night.
I would
night.
Say,
yeah.
for night. The most part, it pretty much takes place in real time.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
If a movie's 2 hours, it would take about 2 hours from everything that they're doing and involved with to get from
point A to point B.
It's almost like they're in like Central Park type area at the beginning.
And in actuality,
and then they go to Coney Island.
That very scene where all those gangs were at, it wasn't Central Park.
I didn't know that it actually would be, but
it was close to it. Originally, the real Coney Island gang wasn't called the Warriors, but it was called the Homicides.
Huh.
And so they
like
didn't
real life.
Yeah, and they didn't even approve of the fictional gang wearing the colors of their turf. And so the wardrobe department had to make sure that that nobody walked off the set with wearing those colors.
Sure.
Otherwise,
oh, yeah.
The actors could have been
because there was a scare of, like Randy said earlier, like of real gangs, you know,
intervening.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, like you said, the hero's journey, when they at the end when they finally come and there's the sun and it's playing Joe Walsh.
Yeah.
It's like once they get to Coney Island and the sun is out, you know that everything's okay. And the sun is kind of
that beaming light of hope.
Sure.
Right.
To show everything's fine, everything's good now.
And it's Joe Walsh's In the City.
Yep.
I mean, it just the score is one of my favorite film scores of all time. I just love the music of it.
It's
and then
like
the soundtrack
a,
is really cool too.
It's like a rock and roll synth.
Yeah, the synth
score.
Yeah.
And it was the first time they'd ever used anything like that. And Dvorzin, who was the director, he took a real big risk doing that type of score for the film, but it worked. It totally worked.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then the soundtrack too, it's like Guardians of the Galaxy in a sense.
Yeah,
where
it has different
the music that you hear, it's being played over the radio, and the way that like the gang like leaders, like the main people that's above all the gangs, the way they communicate to all the gangs is
through
like
the
they
radio.
Send
through
a
the
message
radio.
To the DJ.
Interesting.
And the DJ, you know, it shows her up close to the microphone, you just see her lips move, and she's like, "All right, boppers," and it's kind of the code word for talking to the gangs.
Huh.
And
it's like all we can do is play this song for you.
Right. And it's like you know, hey Warriors, you know, you gotta watch out, and like here's a song, and it's the old song, Nowhere to Hide.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like it fits really well. It's awesome.
That's
the
cool.
way they work that stuff in there.
I really like that is cool. I love music. So the idea of, and I find that me, I'm one of those people that connects with lyrics mm-hmm. a lot. I mean, I really like instrumental stuff too.
Oh, yeah.
But how you can use lyrics to send messages.
Yes.
That
it's
is
all,
really
it's all
cool.
done like yeah. to where like a regular radio listener may
wouldn't
not pick
know.
Up on the stuff.
Right.
But if you're in the gang and you know the code,
yeah.
you know that things are going down.
That's cool. Yeah. I like that.
And yeah. I thought it was really interesting. One of the key points I found about the film, with knowing that it all took place at night, it mm-hmm. took 60 days. And I guess I was wrong. It's not 8 p.m. that they started filming.
Regardless.
It was midnight. Midnight to 8 a.m. that they would film to make sure it was completely dark.
Yeah.
And I still haven't found where they actually had the big old meeting.
Yeah.
And it's like you see all the people and it's hundreds of people. Like,
yeah, there's tons.
So many people there. And it's surprising because it's like, well, where would they have gotten all those extras?
Yeah.
And part of them were actual gang members.
Yeah.
That's
actual
interesting.
Gangs. And it was back in 79 to where there was actually, you know, kind of some problems
yeah.
with that area. And so, you know, that's one of the nice things about being able to talk about this movie for the U-Turn fundraiser.
Yeah.
Is talking about the effect that gangs had on New York mm-hmm. back in the 70s and 80s mm-hmm. and how things have changed even over the course.
Do you think the fact that they filmed in New York and there was such a gang problem at that point in time that they really had trouble with casting?
Actually, there were newcomers.
So it was a lot of new...
To the set.
Most of them are no-name...
Yeah.
Actors.
You don't
some of them have gone on to do things later on.
Like a starting point.
But that at that point, not many of them were. Yeah.
James Remar was one of those that went on to
He's
do
maybe the
more.
Biggest one to come
yeah.
out of
yeah.
it.
Exactly, because I didn't recognize a lot of the people in that film.
And do you
right.
think they used like no names because of the you know, the issues that could have arise versus, like, you know, like, bigger stars at that time
I mean,
point
it wasn't,
did not want to take part, or do you think...
I don't think it was a huge movie. Like, to have that sort of cast and the type of movie, like, I don't know that they would have been capable to...
Because it was too small.
...to get
yeah.
big
okay.
stars.
Well, the...
Not
that,
sure about that.
That and the fact that, like I said before, they had a really hard time with marketing for this film
sure.
because they didn't want... gangs to react
negatively
to where they're cause more violence
sure.
than
and,
what
and
was in the
you
film.
You know, like, I was just thinking too, like, a movie like Stripes, it actually got people interested in joining the military. It almost glorifies
it.
That, like, whoa, like, mm-hmm. being in a
exactly.
gang would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, so I think the studio and whoever marketing would get nervous, like, there's already a gang problem and this
sure.
could push it even further.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so that's why, you know, they had to keep it very tight and that's why mm-hmm. it didn't get a lot of press because of the subject matter.
Sure.
And honestly, yes, this film is rated R. However, there are probably only a handful of F-bombs that are dropped. And I'm
yeah.
very careful, even on my show, that I have to keep it pretty clean because I don't want
sure.
right,
to
right.
have to... I'm not one that will go out and see just an R-rated movie just
sure.
because. So I'm very careful. And so with The Warriors, the only reason that... I'd say it's not that bad of a film is because it's a lot of action and they're moving across New York and there isn't really a lot of time for them to stop and talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's R-rated back then. I mean,
yeah.
most things
Well,
were
at that point there was
PG
and there was
and
R.
There was, R.
Right.
Yeah.
There was
yep.
no middle ground. Yeah.
yeah.
So do you think that if this film was made today, they'd run into a lot of the same issues?
That's a good question.
as far as like worrying about, I don't think so.
The gang problem probably isn't as bad in New York as it was back in the 70s and 80s.
It's also different types of gangs nowadays. Yeah. It's nothing like that. I don't know how many we have like those types of gangs though.
More theatrical.
I don't know if it would be a major problem. I don't think so. I think it would feel like a different type of movie though too. Yeah. Like, it's pretty grounded. It's dark. It's gritty. I don't know if a movie like that today would. Not that it wouldn't be good, but it would never have that same feeling.
Sure.
Unless it was like on a more indie kind of budget, you know, like Rob Zombie did it, or if you know, James Mangold, who did Logan, did it, or something like that. Sure. Like, you might get that kind of feeling, but other than that,
post-apocalyptic type thing, it would fit for that.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, some of the notes that I was looking at were referring to areas in regard to gang movies, and one of the movies that it referred to was Escape from New York, because in that movie, essentially, New York City is pretty much a gang-controlled environment.
Right.
Because it's Manhattan. It's not New York City in general, but it's the island of Manhattan that they sequester off, and it's by itself, and it's basically like a gang-controlled area. And so that's one of the areas that it was talking about. One of the points in the film's promotion, after the initial ruckus, when it was released, it ordered several bits of voice over for the trailer to be censored. And this was done by placing a piece of tape over the optical soundtrack. And in the trailer, the narrator states, "Between them and safety stands 20,000 cops and 100,000 sworn enemies." And the fact that the gangs outnumber the police by 5 times apparently was considered a security issue, and the words 10,000 and 20,000 were bleeped out with the tape. And this probably coincides with Paramount reacting to it and saying, "Hey, we don't want violence after the screenings for this film." And one of the unique things about it was they used wipes for their film, kind of like what you see in Star Wars. You see them do a wipe for a scene change. Well, they did the very same thing with the Warriors.
Interesting.
So when you watched it recently, I know that there's two versions on. You said you watched it on
Amazon.
Right.
Yep.
So did you watch the director's cut or the theatrical?
I think it was just the theatrical.
Okay.
It was long, though. It was an hour and 43 minutes.
The difference is the director at the time wanted to put, like, some in-between scenes, like where you said those wipes are. The reason why they were there was because he wanted to put some sort of comic-looking, like, flipping comic book pages in the original movie, but at that time there was no money, there wasn't a great way of doing it that it would look good. So then all these years later, they did like a, I don't know, like a 30th anniversary of it, and they created some of that. And the weird thing that happened with it though was that in doing that, like, they took out some of those scenes that led into the wipe, and instead placed it with the comic over it. It's kind of neat to have it in there, but then you kind of do get two different experiences. So I just wasn't sure which one. If you didn't see it with the comics...
I had just seen it as it was probably with the theatrical.
Which I probably prefer it that way a little more, because like the comic thing, like, the movie looks a certain way.
Yeah.
And like I said, that'd be really hard to create that look. And then with new technology put in it, it's just kind of like, it just feels a little different.
It feels off.
It doesn't really take away from the movie, but it just feels a little different.
And they also had to put in, like, extra lighting. I mean, of course, you would think that on a movie set, they would actually have to have extra lighting. But there was quite a bit of light for the film, mm-hmm. but they certain times when they would do a certain scene, they had to add lights to actually give you the feeling of saying, oh, all right, we need to brighten this up, otherwise we can't see anybody.
Sure.
Right.
And
sure.
that happens with a lot of older 1970s, early 80s movies. Mm-hmm. For one, like I just mentioned, Escape from New York. There are some scenes in that movie you can't see anybody because it's completely black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He didn't spare any budget to have any extra lighting. Mm-hmm. But at least with Dvorzon, he actually took the time to say, all right, we need to brighten this up. Like the scene with all the people in the park,
mm-hmm.
they had to bring in extra lights so that way they could actually see everybody
that there.
Yeah. But the film works really nice by the fact that with it taking place at night, you get natural light. You get natural shades, and like there's a scene where two of the warriors, they come out from under a tree, and you see the shade of the tree hiding them, mm-hmm. so that way they can't be seen by the police off in the distance.
Yeah.
And it makes it feel more real, mm-hmm. because it's like, oh yeah, that's the right type of lighting that it would actually be in the film.
Interesting. Old style filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it works really well. I was really impressed by like certain things in the film, like you had mentioned about the narration for the radio,
mm-hmm.
and the lady that would come on, can you dig it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there was a group called Deaf Squad, and they sampled the line, can you dig it?
Well, that was the big thing with Cyrus. It was an interesting thing where, you know, Cyrus was like this grand poobah.
Yeah,
of the
he
gangs.
Was like the leader of gangs
and
in
like,
New York.
It's like he wants to create this positivity and unity, but at the same time, like, it is still gangs.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd be giving this big inspirational speech, and then he'd be like, can you dig it?
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the main quotes from the film.
Sure.
The other main one is the, you know, it's the beer bottles.
Warriors come out to play. And it's so creepy in the film because you
hear
it. He
actually went on to still do stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. You hear it before you see him do it.
Well, yeah.
And you're like, what is that clanking?
Right.
And you think it's like some sort of metal, but it's bottles.
Yeah. Interesting.
Like he's clanking beer bottles together. Yeah. To form that
next
sound.
Next time you're around three beer bottles, put them in your fingers and thumbs and clank them together.
Bowling ball them, yeah.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that was one of the things that I found interesting about that about the movie was that, you know, they used these different things. And then there was a novel that they had gotten the rights to in 1969. They had gotten the rights to the novel to be able to use the material of it and to be able to have the liberty to be able to do certain things with the film that they wouldn't normally have been able to do. And go ahead. Did you have something or?
No.
Okay.
Really?
I was thinking about when I was doing more research for the film, I was thinking about the score itself. And yes. Barry Dvorzon, he said he always enjoyed creating music and he never expected to be revered for it. And so it was a shock when the musician, composer, and songwriter found himself being fawned over like some kind of rock god.
Really?
Through music conferences he attended over the past decades that he was doing this. And he said, oh my gosh, I was treated like some kind of hero. And he recalled that his fellow musicians praised for his soundtrack with the work that it was gritty and it was kind of dark and it had this feel to it. But at the very beginning of the film, when you first watch it and you think that you're just watching like a picture.
Right.
But it's like lights from a carousel.
Mm-hmm.
Or not right. Ferris wheel. Yep. It's like a Ferris wheel. And then you hear the music and you kind of get pumped up because you're like, oh, this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And
my band
it's
has
really
used
different.
That score 4 hour like intro, like walk on the stage music before.
Yeah, nice. It's so perfect because it great. Really does work.
I want to say that was probably like outside of like real songs, you know, radio songs and whatever. Like watching a movie, hearing that score was probably like the first film score that like really connected with me. I'm just like, that is cool. And like you said, it sets a tone. Like I love it. Like I own the vinyl of it.
The vinyl.
And, Well, which is the perfect way to listen to for a film like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how because, it's meant to be heard. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the movie, you see the radio.
Yep. You see her dropping needle
she drops
to
needle
wax.
For the vinyl record being played. And one of the things that gets me about the song In the City by Joe Walsh is that my wife was talking to me and she said, that song by the Eagles, it just doesn't really fit with the album that they put it on. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of get that. And then I said, well, they did use it for the Warriors. And she said, oh, well, that makes sense. So she kind of could see where they could take that song and use it in a film, because the Eagles aren't really like that. They don't really use... They weren't really a urban band.
Right.
They were more
country
and folk rock and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but with the score, it's just really amazing that the entire thing was more like rock and roll. And it wasn't... Like, it had a little bit of jazz to it. And then there are scenes in the movie where you see the skaters. And the whole fight scene of the skaters, that took 6 days to film.
Really?
For them to do that.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. It took them 6 days to do that entire, like, it's only, what, not even 10 minutes. It's only maybe five-minute scene.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a five-minute scene, and it took them 6 days to do it.
Because, like, that's when they're down in, like,
the subway area. Yeah.
And you just start seeing someone rolling around on his roller skates, and it's like, what's going on here? And another one pops
and
in,
you
and
realize,
it's all, like,
oh, they're a gang.
And...
Why did it say why it took 6 days to film?
No, it's just they had to get the timing right. They had to get, it was still a subway used.
I get what you're saying.
So they had to do it within a certain amount of time. And they had to, like, make it really tiny little cuts and coordinate it. And all the choreography, they had to get people to be brought in to train the cast how to do the choreographed fight scenes.
On roller skates,
and,
I'm guessing.
Well, not only that, but even the scenes where they're fighting the Furies, the baseball Furies in the forest, in one of the parks, those scenes they had to choreograph all that movement and all of those fight scenes. And even there's a whole section of the movie where there's four of the Warriors that get brought into this other little room with this female gang called the Lizzies, and they think they're having a good time and everything, and actually they want to kill them. So they seem nice, but
they're not.
And it's just really interesting how the LP of the film was brought out, and then they released it later on cassette, and now it's become kind of a cult classic in a way, even with the score, because it's just so unique. And a lot of films did that back at that time. Like, you look at Tron, for instance. It was an entire, pretty much electronic score.
Sure.
And, you know, I really love scores and soundtracks, and this one stood out to me as being really different from anything I'd heard before. And I liked it. I liked the score. It's very well done.
Yeah. Being a rock musician, like, I almost don't listen to the radio or rock songs anymore. I still do, but, like, my head is so clouded with music all the time. that I usually just say, like, when I'm in my car, it's usually just in silence.
Sure.
But, like, when I actively am trying to find something to listen to anymore, it's film scores.
Yeah.
And Warriors is one of those main go-tos.
Oh, yeah.
I love scores, yeah, for sure.
Check this one out.
So, yeah.
Yeah, see, I'm convinced now. I need to go listen to it.
And then also, if you are a video game aficionado, there was a video game, back in 1995 that was called The Warriors. And I believe
they tried to bring it back out recently, or a new version of it.
Not maybe. I'll have to look into it. They brought a lot of the cast back for the voice acting.
Yeah, they did all the voice acting at the Pop Culture Exchange. They have, I believe, they have the actual video game there.
Nice.
I have
great shot, by the way.
Yes, it is.
That
agreed.
If that's a promotion, that's anything.
Pop
Culture,
like,
Exchange.
Oh.
Want to be able to go in there. So, you know, I've got a few cues I'd like to play today. Okay, so the ones that I have is, like, I'm going to be doing two sets here. One is the theme from The Warriors, which is the highlight of the film. And as you've brought out, it's a very kind of inspirational, kind of motivational
theme.
And that's one of the main...
Well, and it starts off slower and ominous, and it's like, what is this building up to? And then it builds up, and it's like,
and then I'll play a piece called The Fight, and then The Baseball Furies Chase. Now, with these cues, as the title suggests, the main theme for the movie, it plays at the start of the movie, and the tracks also feature a clip of Masai saying, "Who are the warriors?
Yeah.
I want all those warriors. Send the word." And at the end of the track, there's a noise of the crowd at the conclave, and this is followed by the gunshot that kills Cyrus, and then it conjures up, you know, strange images for the film, but it brings out the theme for the Warriors, the fight, and the Baseball Furies Chase. They're like a testosterone-laden instrumental piece, combining a sinister guitar and a plodding drum work that peppers with a creepy-sounding keyboard.
Hmm.
And so it kind of gets
so descriptive.
an idea...
Like,
I have to do some research.
Oh, yeah.
But what are your thoughts
on
kind of that feel to the beginning of the score?
Yeah, no, I would agree with all that. Like I said, I mean, it means a lot to me, you know, just as a musical piece in general. I mean, one of the first film scores that, like, stuck out to me. Said I've used it as intro music for my band, you know, to get me pumped up to go up on stage, and that was a pretty good description of the layers of the music and whatnot. So
yeah,
it's a solid intro song. It's kind of on par with is it 2001, the
sure.
That was a great intro music, and this is obviously not the same style by any means, but it's one of those, it'll really get your blood pumping the more it builds up.
Yeah
it's good stuff.
And so now,
and because, like, some of the keyboard work is I mean, it's kind of percussive.
Yeah, it is.
You know, you would almost think that, like, and drums do come in.
Like, you almost feel like the keyboards, you know, are actually a drum. Yeah.
But it's actually keyboard.
The keyboard,
you know, it's
that's
notes.
Doing it.
Right,
and it's
right.
Like, they're doing it really fast to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really, really well done. So now I'll play that. We'll be right back.
the war. I want all the war. Send the word.
The baseball furies dropped the ball, made an error. Our friends are on second base and trying to make it all the way home.
So next, I'll be concluding with, so these pieces are a combination of several parts to that initial piece of music. We have the Orphans, and then Turnbull, AC's part one, and then we have a Riff Boss, then Turnbull's AC part two, and then Molotov's Cocktail. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that is. I couldn't remember. The Molotov cocktail.
The Molotov cocktail.
Yeah.
There's a scene during the Orphans when the Orphans are like, you know, the Warriors are like, we don't have any problem with you. We're just trying to get back to our place. And the Orphans are like, well, you know what? If you guys are cool with us, cool with you.
Okay.
And then the prostitute comes out, and she's just, like, making fun of the Orphans. Oh, you're just... and whatever. And they're just like, we're not going to be challenged by you. And they're like, you know what? You're not coming through our territory. And a whole bunch of
she
them
causes
come
trouble.
Out. And, you know, they're...
So
they're,
the lead
they're,
warrior, he gets a concoction made. And
well,
then...
they, it's like they know what needs to happen. And, like,
yeah.
a couple of them have the ingredients.
Yep.
And they, like, pass it along, and each one yeah. starts putting things
it's
together.
It's just kind of funny.
And they get a Molotov cocktail,
yeah.
throw it in a car, explodes it,
yeah.
and then they run off. And the
yep.
orphans, because they're not really that good of a gang anyway,
they run off.
They're just like, oh, they get scared and run away.
Yeah. So that's that whole piece. And it actually works very well in the film, and you get this, like, you know, kind of percussive beat to it, and you then
like
you get... this like amped up action cue to where they're running away,
right.
and it carries you through the music.
Oh yeah.
And then we have Skater, the men's room fight, and then finally
yeah.
we'll have Riff learns the truth, the platform, and the warriors and the rogues. And so with the Riffs, they're a huge gang in this film. Like, they have, like, this whole underground area, and they actually set themselves up kind of like samurai.
Yeah, they're, like,
in
a like,
Komodos.
Komodo, yeah.
Okay.
Similar to John Wick 2, kind of.
Well, and it's funny, because, like, yeah, they're wearing, like, these kind of classy red
mm-hmm.
Komodo robes.
Mm-hmm.
They're black guys. They're wearing aviator sunglasses. Like, they have a look.
Yeah.
And
they
it's
a specific
cool.
look. Yeah. And it's unique because they kind of keep track of what's going on, what has happened. You know, they know about the shooting. They know who died. But they don't really know all the details. And so they've been having people do some investigating while they've been out and about trying to find the warriors. And at the end, you get someone that steps up and says, hey, I know exactly what happened. I saw what happened. And so they don't tell you because,
mm-hmm.
you know, they kind of leave it to the very end to have
mm-hmm.
things revealed. But it's a very effective way that it's brought out. And these cues really show that amped up action for the warriors, even against the rogues. And in the music, you even get the one rogue guy that clanks
the
bottles
beer
together
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
says, "Warriors, come
mm-hmm.
out to play!" Another podcast I would recommend to listen to for this very movie is FilmSack.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's a great episode, and I don't know what number it is, but they're in the over 300s right now, so you may have to go back a little ways, but it's a fun episode that they talk about that very situation that is discussed. What are your thoughts on pretty much the movie in general?
Well, as far as the score, I think the score... It's great to know that the director and the composer is the same guy, and it really felt like they matched each other. The energy of the score matched the energy of what you were watching, and you know, I guess it was great for him because he didn't have to worry about clashing with some guy's vision of how a scene should sound.
He knew how
and,
he wanted that movie to feel.
Yeah, yeah. And he really
and,
put it together
yeah.
well. It's something really fun to watch. And even though it's a movie of its time, it's still kind of, it's a classic, and that's an era that a lot of people kind of wish would be filmed more and whatnot, and it fits back then, but it's fun to watch now, so,
yeah.
yeah.
Yep. So, any thoughts, Billy?
It's like a top five favorite movie of mine, so,
nice.
I mean, that's, I don't know what more, you know, I could say about it, you know, it's... I love the movie, love the score, soundtrack's great for it. Like I said, the soundtrack means something to
yeah.
the movie, and it's great. I remember when I first got it on Blu-ray, I watched it one night, like before I went to bed, came back out to the living room to watch it, and came back out to the living room the next morning. It's like, what am I going to watch? And I was like, The Warriors is in. I'm going to watch it. And it's one of those ones that it just plays right back to the beginning. Like, I watched it 2 times that next morning. So I watched it 3 times. Like, I love that movie. And it's like,
yeah. I was going to say, Joe Carnahan, he's a director. He directed, like, The Gray and a couple other things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He loves this movie. And he fought for a while to do, before the Netflix Daredevil series, he wanted to make an R-rated Daredevil in this era.
That would have been great.
And he did, he cut a concept trailer and used a lot of footage
from
this and
Warriors.
A lot of other, and he even had the, can you dig it, in
there
the trailer.
There is a short, like, fan-made, like, trailer or something for a Warriors movie. It looks like it could be a new one.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
It looks great. And it's like, whoa.
Well,
but
if you
want to
see,
it's not really being
if
made.
If you want to
but...
see that with Daredevil in it, that's what he did. And unfortunately, it got passed up. But
I need to look that up.
It's fun to
watch. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Sounds cool.
Well, I'd like to thank Josh and Allie for being on this episode, as well as Billy. First time we've been able to actually kind of hang out.
I know.
And
yep.
Do this sort of thing. I want to do it more. We'll get an opportunity at O-Comic-Con, so that'll be fun. With this fundraiser for U-Turn, it's been a real real nice experience to be able to promote that fundraiser. And I'd like to thank Jillian Orwell for my intro today. I got in touch with her a long time ago, and she just composed this intro for me. And put it together, and
so a new intro.
Yeah,
debuted with this episode.
Yeah, awesome. Well, no, actually, it premiered with my 25th episode.
Oh
yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
So
all right.
This is actually my. This will be actually a special episode. So this will be a 29th episode. So
it's cool.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's something I was trying to work on. You can find me at soundtrackalley.net. Email me at soundtrackalley@yahoo.com. Follow me on my Facebook page. Follow the podcast Arcade Network. Find it on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play. Now, I've even gotten a notification that it can be found on Amazon Alexa through the Echo.
Nice.
That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
So,
Alexa, play Soundtrack Alley. Playing Soundtrack Alley. That was more Surrey, but...
Yeah. But that's kind of what it is, because you can search for it through the Amazon Echo.
Very cool.
And it
works.
That's
great.
That's so
I'm going to
cool.
get me an Echo just for that.
There you go.
But so now we can play these last cues, the Orphans, the Turnbull, the Riff Boss Turnbull Part 2, and the Molotov Cocktail, the Skater Men's Room, the Fight... And see, all these, they have 3 different sections to each piece of music.
Yeah,
so it's not really that much. It's more like each is about 3 minutes, 3-4 minutes. And then we have the last bit, which is Riff Learns the Truth, the Platform, and the Warriors and the Rogues. So happy listening. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley, the podcast. I hope you take some time to review my podcast on iTunes and also listen to it on Podbean. And if you leave a review or rating on there, it'll help us get noticed on iTunes. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley Spotlight. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Also, if you want to leave a comment, question, or concern, please email me at soundtrackalley@gmail.com and enjoy looking at my blog at soundtrackalley.com.